Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I am Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, we're joined by Sameed Khan from Maverick. For someone that's been in the Salesforce ecosystem for only a few years, Sameed is really operating at an advanced developer level. He's been working with Lightning Web Components recently, and in the episode, we talk about the improvements that Salesforce have made for the platform by releasing Web Components and moving away from Aura. We talk about what developers like Sameed look for in companies and how they can be attracted to certain companies and roles. And we also talk about the fact that Salesforce is now becoming a cooler technology to work on for the broader technology and development market. So Sameed's someone that's really, really grown quickly in the Salesforce space, really enjoys writing good quality code, and is just a cool guy to speak to about the technology world and the Salesforce development market. And I think you'll enjoy this episode.
So Sameed, thank you very much for joining us on Talent Hub Talk today.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. So I'm really excited to talk to you about your career and the relatively recent transition into Salesforce, and I guess a bit around why and how you made that transition and how you found it. So for the benefit of listeners, can you tell us a bit about what you did before Salesforce?
Right. So I was actually an electrical engineer. I did a few stints at two companies back home, two very large companies. One was telecom, and then the other was like a tobacco company. Mm-hmm. And I kind of realized that I didn't really want to do that. Now, the things I liked about electrical engineering in uni was the programming aspects of it.
Sure.
Even though the programming in that I do in electrical engineering is quite different, it's more heavily mathematical and statistical and things like that.
Yeah.
And then the other aspect is hardware and operating system and just, you know, bare metal C code. Mm-hmm. But I guess that kind of got me on a track where I was more interested in learning about programming, and I then wanted to make the transition to be a software developer.
Yeah.
So I started learning in my free time more about how application programming works, and, you know, so yeah, that's pretty much how I made my
career. So was that an easy transition from the more mathematical programming into software engineering?
It did take a fair amount of effort, but at the same time, the good thing about, you know, the internet is it's built by programmers, and you can find a lot of resources if you really want to upskill.
Yeah.
Like, it's not very difficult to find resources. It's more around how do you decide which is the right resource for you.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, you kind of understand like what you're interested in and what paths you want to pursue. And that's the way I approach things when I'm trying to learn something new, is I want to learn the fundamentals.
Sure.
And once I have a good grasp of, let's say, the theory, then I want to try my hand at a few technologies and things like that.
Okay.
So I found like resources in Coursera, Udemy pretty helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so you moved into the like a full-time software engineering role.
Yeah.
What were you doing?
Right. So I started applying to a few startups in when I moved to Melbourne. And I was interviewing with a couple of them and found this job at Social Suite, which was ASV partner,
yeah,
Salesforce. And what they did was data collection and analytics for nonprofits.
Sure.
So I kind of went into that role. Well, during the interview, they had shown me a demo of their product, and it is, had these charts and graphs and figures and, like, you know, all the analytic tools. And I think I'd expected that I'd be joining in to make those features,
yeah,
but then turned out they were using Wave Analytics, which is okay, called Einstein Analytics now.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's how I kind of accidentally got into doing a Salesforce role.
Sure.
That said, it wasn't just a Salesforce shop though. So we did have a mobile app that we were working on.
Yeah.
And that utilized the mobile SDK to connect data with Salesforce, but then, you know, that was a app built on React Native, which is a JavaScript framework
for, sure, mobile development. Okay, cool. So what was it that really interested you about moving into a Salesforce role full-time? Where did that come from?
I think like around over a year in, I kind of realized that I liked working on Salesforce. And So Salesforce is a little bit different, right? Because it's proprietary technology, you don't really have the availability of libraries that you'd have in other frameworks or other languages.
Sure.
Because it just doesn't have that kind of open source community. Now, that makes it quite difficult and challenging to debug code sometimes, and it's often quite annoying in terms of how you start adding features, because there's just not enough of a baseline. But then the advantage of that is you get to solve problems that you wouldn't get to in other technologies.
Sure.
You get to solve problems that are maybe a solved problem in another domain, but you're solving it for the first time.
Yeah.
So I found that challenge quite interesting.
And okay.
That's kind of what led me to move into a more
Salesforce. And then, so when you first made the transition to Salesforce, what were you instantly getting exposure to from a development perspective?
So my first project was at NAB, and that was more of a, so that is a quite a complex project, because they've had talks about this in Down Under Dreaming, but that is basically they're trying to consolidate around 3,000 orgs into one single org.
Yeah.
So that was quite a complex project, and I did a fair bit of the UI in that project. So we were using Aura, and I don't think there are a lot of developers there who had used Aura prior to that, but I'd been exposed to Aura through my time at Social Suite, because we were some of the early adopters of, you know, the Lightning framework
and
Aura that way. So a lot of the work I did there was basically set up the frameworks into how we should go about building UI components and how to reuse code and things like that.
Sure.
So I basically set up the front-end framework that was then used in NAB to build the UI for that project.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. How did you find Aura and VisualForce when you first started getting exposure to them?
Well, this might sound strange, but I'm actually a big fan of VisualForce. Because I feel like for its time, it was definitely ahead of its time. It is quite, it's quite simple. It's like ASP.NET, and therefore you can do anything you want. So, and you know, you can have jQuery, and there is no Locker service, so it does give you quite a lot of freedom. It integrates very well with Apex, and you can accomplish a lot of things with very little code. And I reckon like a lot of the early success Salesforce had was just because of how good VisualForce was.
Okay.
But then, you know, the state of the JavaScript world changed and the modern frameworks came in, and I guess it's always difficult to keep up to date.
Yeah.
And when Aura came out, it was already 5 years behind.
Sure.
So I'm not a big fan of Aura.
Okay.
I did a lot of Aura, but I'm not a big fan. I don't think it was particularly well designed. It wasn't very performant. It had a very steep learning curve. If you're coming in from VisualForce, then it's like, you know, it's different altogether because it's a different architecture. But even if you're coming in from other JavaScript frameworks, it just doesn't look like how JavaScript is structured in any other framework.
Sure.
So it wasn't a particularly good framework, I'd say. But, you know, that led to some challenging problems.
So had you done a lot of JavaScript before at Social Suite?
I had done a fair bit of JavaScript at Social Suite. Now, I'd done a fair bit of Lightning there too, but because we build a mobile app in React Native, I just had a good grasp of JavaScript already.
Sure. So do you think Aura to you was different to how a lot of other people in the market felt about it, that perhaps didn't have the JavaScript skills that you had?
Yeah. So the thing is, right, if you're coming into Aura from a VisualForce background, like now VisualForce, you still have to do some JavaScript, especially if you're on dynamic website.
Yeah.
Right. And then, so you'd have two kind of people coming into Aura, right? People who are outside Salesforce, who maybe has a somewhat of a JavaScript background because they have maybe done front-end development.
Yeah.
And to them, it would be quite different. Just like, you know, me having done React and React Native outside it, had that perspective. But then if you have someone coming in from VisualForce, then it's basically someone who's learning a front-end framework for the first time from having come with, you know, legacy technologies like jQuery and that.
Yeah.
JavaScript and things like that. So was my perspective different? Maybe not entirely. It's just that because I started doing Aura in the very early days when it wasn't didn't have particularly good support, not all features were supported, and had a lot of bugs and things. Like I kind of had to wade through that period when till, you know, it became reasonably usable.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you think Lightning Web Components now mean for the Salesforce market?
Well, I really like it. Like I've started using it since basically the very beginning.
Yeah.
And because they're leveraging the web standards and it's quite minimalist, like there is not as much of a steep learning curve as Aura did.
Sure.
So I think it's going to be useful to attract developers from outside the ecosystem.
Yeah.
While at the same time, if it's someone who's moving on from Visual Force, it's a lot simpler to pick up LWC than it was to pick up Aura.
Okay.
So you're just going to get more people interested in it. And because Salesforce have internally used it for a while to build some of their stuff in Aura,
yeah.
And because it is interoperable with Aura, then it's been tested and it's not as buggy as Aura was in early days.
Okay.
So I feel like it's quite a robust framework.
Sure.
And once again, the big reason for that is it's leveraging on standard web technologies.
Yeah.
And it's not trying to reinvent the wheel.
Sure.
Which is why it's it just works for the most part. And it is a pretty good framework, I'd say.
So was that when you say you've from the very beginning of Lightning Web Components being a thing, you've started using them? Was that a choice of yours, or was that because the companies that you've been working with have had that kind of appetite to do that?
It's a mix of both. So I guess because I was pretty interested to see what Web Components had to offer, and because I'm not a big fan of Aura, as I've clearly mentioned,
yeah.
I had the incentive to transition. And then a lot of the companies I was working with wanted to, you know, just do the very latest, and they were wise enough to realize that, you know, if Salesforce is doing away with Aura, then they should probably not stick to Aura.
Sure.
You know, the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
So if they had a chance to transition to LWC, and if they could work with someone who could do that, then it was in their interest to, you know, move to LWC.
Sure.
That's pretty much the space I was at.
And what resources have you found useful for kind of picking up LWC?
Right. Once again, I guess my background in JavaScript, because with Web Components, what Salesforce is trying to do is like they're trying to utilize the existing body of knowledge in the JavaScript world. And you'd see that if you just looked at some of the new trailheads that they've released. Like,
yeah.
I think they have one that's basically like that entire module is just, you know, teaching you more in JavaScript.
Sure.
So just knowing some of the changes that's happened in JavaScript over the last couple of years has been useful. I usually keep up to date with the state of, you know, the industry through blogs,
yeah.
articles and things like that. So that's been useful. Salesforce's documentation is pretty decent too.
Sure.
Yeah, so
okay.
I think that's been useful. And then, you know, with any JavaScript technology, if you understand the browser, it's going to be helpful.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of people say software engineering is an art. And I think, you know, you have been someone that hasn't been in the market for that long, but has really, I've heard really good things. And I think you've made a real impact and really picked up Salesforce quickly. And when I've spoken to you off recording in the past, you kind of go into detail around how it is an art. And, you know, there's some real skill to it. So how have you found the quality of the code in the Salesforce ecosystem? And is it what you would have expected before you kind of moved into this space?
It really depends. Like, so you're gonna get developers who have maybe transitioned to Salesforce after decades of experience with, you know, .NET or C# or Java. So what you get from developers like that is they're experienced developers. Like the fact that they do Salesforce is not the key thing. It's just that they're good developers overall.
And yeah.
Good developers write good code.
Sure.
And then on the other side of the spectrum, you get people who maybe, you know, did a trailhead on how to write a for loop and then are now a Salesforce developer.
Yeah.
And when that happens, yeah, like the code quality isn't great. So,
sure.
And then there is, you know, like it's a spectrum and there is everything in middle. Like you get people who are maybe not that experienced but still have approached Salesforce development from the idea that it's only a subset of regular development and you need to understand how software development works fundamentally.
Sure.
And now, you know, in terms of saying it's an art form, I wouldn't want to elevate what I do to an art form, let's say, but there is still, you know, definite room for creativity and flexibility and just in how you approach things. And it's not something that's a hard science, because you see, the big thing about writing code is that the code is for people and not the computer.
Yeah.
The computer understands binary. That's all it understands.
Sure.
And the computer doesn't care if it's good code or bad code.
It'll
run it. The performance might differ, but that's a different thing. You're writing code for yourself in the future so that you understand 6 months later what you wrote.
Yeah.
And you're writing code so that you can collaborate with other people.
Sure.
And that's something that you always need to keep in mind. So if you're a good developer, you'd be keeping that in mind. And, you know, if it's just someone who's not had that exposure, then they're going to churn out that code.
Sure.
That's just the nature of the job.
So on that point, because obviously I'm not technical, like a component to me, if someone says I've built a Lightning component and then, or a Lightning web component now, and if it does what it's supposed to do, I guess in my from my side, that's great, right?
Yeah.
They've delivered what they're supposed to.
Yes.
But you look at that in a different way and think, have they built that in the best possible way?
Yeah, so the thing I'd be looking for, like, one thing is performance, right? So maybe if it's something that's a very simple thing and performance is not an issue, then that's probably fine. But then the thing you come to is, all right, so you've set your requirements and someone's built something, but your requirements change. Your requirements constantly change. Like, that's the one thing that's in a constant. But your client's requirement is never the same.
Sure.
And then as your requirements change and you want the component to do something a little different from what it was doing, is that change easy to make or not? That's what I'm looking at.
Sure.
If your code's been written with the right abstractions and it's readable and testable and is not it doesn't easily break, and if it's robust, then that's a good code.
Sure.
And it's not about how pretty the code looks on your editor. That's not what I'm looking at. I'm looking at, all right, what are the abstractions like? What libraries are you using? Can I add a new feature without breaking existing functionality? And can I do it easily and quickly?
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you test a Lightning web component?
So early days, you couldn't because there was no test framework. They did then incorporate Jest, but then they did that nearly to the end of Aura's lifecycle. And then with web components, it has support for Jest from scratch. So you don't even have to write your test classes to run on the server, you can run it locally.
Sure.
So it's pretty good that way.
Sure.
And Jest is an open source testing library built by Facebook.
So yeah.
And I'm glad that they're utilizing the open source ecosystem.
Yeah, sure. So can anyone learn to code?
Yeah. Like, obviously, I'm not from a traditional CS background, and some of the best developers I know are not from a CS background. Like, I know developers who are extremely strong and very good at what they do, and they're from a business background. So, yes, anyone can learn to code. But I think it's around how you approach coding. That's where it makes a difference. Because I was speaking about my own experience learning how to code and just going through the fundamentals and learning that. Now, one thing I thought of when I got into this is that, I'm coming into a playing field where I don't have the same background as a computer science student.
Yeah.
Or, someone who has done this for a long time. So how do I level the playing field?
Sure.
So I kind of looked at, all right, like, what are the courses that an undergraduate computer science student would do? And what are the equivalents that I can take online? And that's how I approached the theory when it came to learning fundamentals. And I think if someone does that, and even you don't need to learn all of theory, let's say, but some things are pretty important, right? So it's like doing a module on Trailhead and thinking like, all right, that's enough, is not gonna serve you for the long run.
Sure.
What Trailhead is good for, and it's very good for that, is revising existing knowledge.
Yeah.
So if you're approaching, if you're trying to get into this field, then maybe the best thing to do is, do some introductory programming course and then supplement that with an introduction to data structures and algorithms.
Because
all that an application is something that manipulates your data.
Yeah.
So if you understand where the data lives and how it's structured and what its shapes are, and then you're going to be a good developer.
Sure. So in my opinion and experience, everyone is looking for people like you, like someone that truly can write good quality code, gets it, is kind of going to go out of their way to keep on top of new things. And so how does someone attract, how do companies make a role appealing to someone like yourself?
Well, I guess the two things that's key is, interesting projects and good culture. And I understand how that sounds very ambiguous. Because it's not very, I could say, all right, an interesting project, but what does that really mean? So personally, I'm always looking for something that's like a technical challenge.
Yeah.
Like, if something's difficult, then I'm interested.
Sure.
Generally. But then, it should be difficult because of the technicality of the project and not just because of, how things are structured in the company, right? So that's key. Also, in terms of culture, I'm looking for companies that, and I'm sure this is true for every developer, that they want to be in an environment where there is the culture of learning.
Sure.
So maybe you can they have seniors who have that mentality to teach and mentor.
Yeah.
And they also give a little room for self-learning and things like that.
Sure.
And if a company is as invested in your learning as you are, then that's a good place to work.
Okay. And I know you've been involved in hiring recently and bringing people from more of a JavaScript background into the Salesforce world. Is Salesforce now a cool, a Salesforce developer role, is that a cool role to have now in the broader engineering world?
Well, I guess it's not as uncool as it used to be, because in 2015, Salesforce got ranked as the worst language to work on in Stack Overflow.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you like that's just a survey result, and it, you know how much attention you want to pay to that. But I feel like Salesforce did do a fine job in trying to take the feedback, and they have improved the situation a little bit, especially with Salesforce DX. They have a competent CLI now.
Yeah.
With web components, they actually have a good framework now. So things are improving. And I think it is getting cooler than it used to be in, say, 2015.
Yeah.
But it's still not the coolest job out there.
Okay.
But then, you know, you want people who want to work in this field because they want a challenge and they want to solve real problems and not because, you know, it's cool.
Sure. So do you admit to your friends that you're a Salesforce developer?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. So what's going to excite you from now on with Salesforce? What do you hope that they do with the platform that's going to keep a developer like you engaged and interested?
One thing that I've really liked in recent times is working with Heroku. I feel like Salesforce has done a fine job with Heroku, and then especially with Heroku Connect.
Yeah.
Like it's quite easy to then, you know, sync your data across and then build services on Heroku, and that just increases their platform capabilities a whole lot.
Sure.
I've liked DX from early days, although there are some discrepancies and some lacks of features here and there, but I feel like they have been working on it to, you know, get the deployment and all of that fixed, and that's been good. Like we can do things like CI/CD that we couldn't in early days easily.
Yeah.
And that's good because, you know, it just brings the state of affairs inside the Salesforce world close to how it is outside it.
Sure.
And yeah, that's always important.
Cool. Okay, well, look, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed the chat.
Thanks, Ben.
And looking forward to seeing how your career develops in the Salesforce ecosystem now that it's a cool place to be. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.